Greetings, and welcome to the Ask Me call on the urgent need for federal aid with frontline workers recovering from COVID-19. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, May 14th, 2020. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ask Me President Lee Saunders. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, operator, and good afternoon. I'm Lee Saunders, President of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Our union and its members have, from the very beginning, been on the front lines of the coronavirus response. It's public service workers. That's who we are, and that's what we do. When our communities need us, we stop at nothing to get the job done. And very often that means we throw ourselves in harm's way, whether we've been given the proper personal protective equipment or not. Right now, members nationwide are putting their lives on the line and exposing their families to risk as well, because a public health emergency demands that public service workers show up and step up. You're going to hear from AFSCME members on this call who can give firsthand accounts of what it's like to be infected with COVID-19. They will also talk about the urgent need for the federal government to deliver a robust package of aid to states, cities, and towns so we can stay on the job and see our communities through this crisis. This pandemic has sent the economy into a nosedive. Revenue is drying up, the tax base is eroding, and working people are facing catastrophic job loss. The economy hemorrhaged more than 20 million jobs in April, about 1 million of them in the public service. That's more public sector jobs lost in a single month than during the entire Great Recession a decade ago. For everything AFSCME members do to strengthen and protect their neighbors and their communities, they're getting thanked with a pink slip. If this continues, it will absolutely shatter our communities. It will turn a recession into a depression. It will make it impossible to defeat COVID-19, reopen the economy, and start on the road to recovery. We need Congress to step in. A bill was introduced in the House on Tuesday, the HEROES Act, that meets the moment. It includes more than $1 trillion in assistance to states, cities, and towns. Instead of bailing out corporations, this bill invests in the pillars of community strength around the country: public education, public safety, public health, and more. This is a moral imperative. It's an economic imperative, and it's overwhelmingly popular as well. 84% of people support this kind of aid package, with robust backing across party lines, among all age groups, and in all regions of the country. The question now is whether Congress, and the U.S. Senate especially, will listen to this huge supermajority of Americans and pass this bill. There's no reason and no excuse for this to become another partisan food fight. This is about keeping our frontline fighters, nurses, corrections officers, social workers, home care providers, on the job in the middle of a global pandemic when the communities need them most. There's nothing partisan about making sure the hospitals aren't overwhelmed when thousands are testing positive for the coronavirus every day. There's nothing partisan about expecting your children's school to be well-staffed or expecting the garbage to be picked up at your home or business. Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike want clean water to come out of the tap. People need the ambulance to show up on time when they live in red, blue, whether they live in red, blue, or purple states. But all these essential services will be threatened if partisanship prevails over common sense and common decency. At this moment of great challenge and crisis for the nation, AFSCME members nationwide are answering the call, showing tremendous strength and stamina. All we ask for is help from the federal government, so we can continue serving our communities during this critical time. we're doing our jobs, Congress should do theirs. It is time to fund the front lines. And with that, I want you to hear from some AFSCME members and leaders. Let me turn it over first to Henry Garrido, Executive Director of AFSCME District Council 37 in New York City. Henry?
Thank you, President Saunders, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Henry Garrido, and I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME District Council 37 in New York City. We are the largest municipal union here in the city. In a few minutes, you're going to hear from two of our members, Vincent and Carmen, who, like thousands of dedicated public services workers in New York and across the country, are literally putting their lives on the line to ensure the delivery of public services our community expects and urgently needs to beat the pandemic and to safely reopen our economy. If we're going to do either of those things, we need Congress to step up, and fast. We need Congress to immediately pass an aid package that will maintain services our community needs and short term and put us on a path to keep our community strong for the long term. This virus has taken a really heavy toll on public service workers and their families. 142 of our members have died. Let me repeat that. 142 of our members have died. 3,000 members have contracted the virus. And at one point, we have almost 400 emergency management technicians, which amount to about 10% of the city's workforce in that sector, were in quarantine. Currently, we have about 400 members who are in quarantine because they've been exposed to the virus and are exhibiting symptoms. None of these folks deserve to be laid off, have their hours cut off, or be furloughed, or even lose their health insurance because Washington failed to act. It would really be a disgrace. And the truth is, our communities cannot afford to see cuts to the services these everyday heroes provide, because without 911 dispatchers, EMTs, medical technicians in our hospitals, sanitarian workers, social workers, finance department staff, and everybody else who works to keep our communities running smoothly, we will not beat this pandemic. If we invest in services, we can and we will. We can also reopen the economy and send Americans back to work if we stay invested in robust public services, our parks employees, our cultural centers, our administrative personnel, school food service workers, and construction employees need to be there in order to get our community and businesses moving again. We're already losing these workers, and every moment that goes by without aid from Congress that Congress should deliver, the situation only gets worse. With every job loss, we're dug deep into an economic hole, and the prospect of a recovery gets further and further away. If there's anything that we've learned from this fallout of the virus, it has demonstrated just how critical having a robust public services are needed in order to deliver that safety net. We cannot be prepared to fight another public health emergency or potential return of the virus. As we reopen, if the services are cut, and the very people who got us through one of the toughest times in our nation's histories are laid off, we cannot revive the economy in our public sector workforce if our public sector workforce is not around to help businesses and people to get safely back to work. We're not out of this yet. More needs to be done, and urgently. Congress needs to ensure that the people who are protecting us receive the help and recognition they deserve, not let them get thanked with layoffs. That's not a way to thank those heroes. We won't stand for that, and neither will the American people. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Mabe. I'm the president of the Ohio Civil Service Employees Association, OCSEA, AFSCME Local 11. We represent Ohio's public employees in every sector, from custodians and employment agency workers to veterans home workers and correctional officers. From the very beginning, the response to this crisis has been chaotic and driven by management decisions without input from officers who understand what it's like to work in correctional facilities every day. The situation in our prisons are being described today, particularly at Marion and Pickaway, as war zones. Although as a veteran, I would add that typically when I was in a war zone in 1990, you at least start with strong leadership, a strict plan, and clear guidance. Since this crisis began, the policies and protocols of the Ohio Department of Corrections has changed by the day and sometimes by the hour. For example, as the CDC urged leaders to reserve N95 masks for first responders, we were told not to wear masks and couldn't bring in our own masks. Then management reversed the course and told us we were allowed to wear our own masks, and if we didn't have any, we could manufacture them, and if we didn't know how, you could Google it, but that we had to sign a waiver to relieve them of responsibility. Finally, the OCSA Board of Directors stepped in and purchased over $200,000 worth of N95s for everyone across the state. Those were confiscated by the federal government, and we had to search for another source of masks to keep public service workers safe, including first responders that should have been protected from the beginning. This is also personal for me. As a result, my wife, Brenda, who works as a correctional officer at Lorain Correctional, my son, Jacob, and mother-in-law, Phyllis, have all been diagnosed with COVID-19. Because my son, Patrick, my daughter, Lane, and I haven't had a fever, we've not been tested. We've had a dry cough and a loss of taste and smell, which is typically a symptom among COVID-positive patients. My wife and other members have literally put their lives on the line for the safety and well-being for our community, and they're being thanked with being asked where they would think additional cuts should come from. Massive layoffs and cuts will leave our communities less safe and hurt correctional officers and would jeopardize and leave both officers and offenders vulnerable to violence. Cutting sanitation services and custodial staff at schools, hospitals, and other public buildings would mean dirty streets and allow germs and the virus to spread freely. Cutting first responders would mean longer 911 and emergency wait times when citizens need us the most. Many public service workers were not protected at work, but they did their job anyways. Now they're saying, thank you for your services. Take this pay cut or layoff. Have the 5,000 new managers hired in the last decade been asked to take a pay cut? If they're being asked to take a layoff. Have elected officials considered repealing the tax cuts for the wealthy they've opted to pass instead of investing in public services? It's urgent that Congress pass state and local funding so our communities can get back on their feet. State and local funding means that we will be able to continue essential services, keeping the public workers who provide them, so we can beat this pandemic and open our economy and communities again. Let's give these courageous everyday heroes who put their lives on the line for us the funding they need to do their jobs. Let's work together so we can continue to make our community stronger and keep our families safe. We're ready to do the work. We just need the support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. My name is Carmen DeLeon, and I'm a respiratory therapist at both Harlem Hospital and New York Presbyterian here in New York. I have been a respiratory therapist for 19 years and was working when SARS, H1N1, and Ebola became a medical emergency for us. However, this pandemic is unlike anything we've seen before. It hit us fast and hard, and there is still so much to learn about how to keep people safe from this virus in the long run. Early on, I will say this, I am both asthmatic and diabetic, and it was clear that I was in a high-risk category very early on, but I still showed up to work through February and March to help treat patients sick with COVID-19. I showed up, although we lacked the necessary personal protective equipment needed to keep us safe. Across the city, everyone I spoke to working in hospitals and medical facilities was in need of more PPE. We saw doctors having to make tough decisions because we had limited resources. As more workers got sick, we also scrambled to cover all patient rooms as therapists and nurses and doctors. Hospital clerks were told that their exposure was minimal, so they didn't need PPE, but they ended up getting sick as well. By the beginning of April, I also tested positive for the coronavirus. The last week in March, I felt many COVID-related symptoms, My lungs felt like they were on fire, and I really struggled to breathe. But because I did not have a high-grade fever, I was not eligible to take COVID-related sick leave. And I was also told that I could still work. Then on April 2nd, after working all day, I finally had a high-grade fever, which did not break until April 11th. While I was sick, I slept for almost 20 hours a day. I really couldn't stay awake. I finally felt better one day, and I tried to go for a walk, but was breathless by the time I made it half a block. My 22-year-old daughter had to go stay with her high school best friend to make sure I wouldn't get her sick as well. I would be lying if I said it wasn't scary. Before I got sick, I saw patients come in who had some symptoms that felt mostly okay, but then some would go on to ventilators, and some didn't make it. I prepared my daughter for the worst, which meant having my daughter understand my healthcare policy and giving her power of attorney over my finances. Our health and safety should have been considered from the beginning for everyone. Thankfully, I'm now on the path to recovery and back at work again, although my breathing still isn't where it used to be. Public service workers are always essential workers. But especially now, having enough healthcare workers like myself on staff is crucial to fighting this pandemic. I ask members of Congress to urgently pass state and local funding so that our communities have the resources we need to preserve essential public services, contain this virus, and safely reopen the economy. In our hospitals, additional state and local funding means having enough support staff, like staff nurses, respiratory therapists, environmental service workers, doctors to care for sick patients. It means having the necessary PPE to keep workers safe and vital medical equipment like ventilators. It also means having public safety officers and sanitation and sewage workers to keep our streets safe and water clean. With aid for our states, cities, and towns, we can ensure that these critical public services like healthcare, EMS, and home care continue. My colleagues and I are tough, and we have gone through some of the worst. Together, we can beat this. I will never stop showing up for my community. I hope Congress and the President show up for us. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Vincent Varielli, and I am an FDNY EMS lieutenant. I'm also the president of ASME District Council 37, Local 3621, the Uniformed EMS Officers Union. I've been with Health and Hospitals Corporation and the New York City Fire Department for over 25 years. Over the course of mid-March into late April, calls to EMS doubled. EMS members on sick leave were up 24%, many from the exposure to the virus. Folks were working 16-hour days and then sleeping in their cars so they don't expose the virus to their families. Many of us on the front lines say it was just like 9/11 every single day. That's the level we were working at. The union helped step up and do what we could to protect our members, providing masks and lodging as needed. I think we've done a pretty good job keeping our workers safe, but unfortunately, we've had a total of 6 EMS members who have passed away, 4 from COVID-19 complications and 2 from suicide. Our biggest concern now that the call volume has dropped is the mental health and PTSD our members are suffering from, brought by dealing with all the death they have seen and the constant pressure of the call volume. We're concerned that this may have a long-term toll on them. I personally testified and attended meetings during the H1N1 crisis because back then we thought the H1N1 crisis would be what coronavirus is today. Thank God it wasn't. But even then, 10 years ago, we said it. We don't have enough places for workers to quarantine. We don't have enough masks, supplies, and we certainly don't have enough staff to handle a crisis of this magnitude. Congress must act immediately to fund the front lines so we can protect public services. We need to keep EMS members, nurses, child care providers, sanitation workers, and so many others on the job, and we need to keep them healthy so they can fight the coronavirus and reopen the economy so that we are stronger than ever before. I have also contracted and recovered from the COVID-19, an experience I never want to go through again. I'm a healthy person. I've only had the flu once in my life, ironically when I took a flu shot. And it still took about 3 weeks to fully recover from the virus. It was, at times, scary. A couple times at night, I was lying down, and I would jump up because I couldn't breathe. I had to start sleeping in a chair because I was afraid I would stop breathing while I was sleeping. I'm grateful that I got through it and never want to go through that again. We must have a real conversation about our healthcare system, as well as how we treat the frontline members like EMS. We need to strengthen public services so a crisis of this level doesn't happen again. Public service workers have been active in New York City to try and get what they need to do their jobs. AFSCME members are our communities, and when we have the tools we need to do the job, we are able to save lives. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, everybody. Operator, could you open up the lines, please?
Thank you. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And one moment, please, for the first question. And the first question comes from the line of Deepti Hajela. Please proceed with the Associated Press. Please proceed with your...
Thank you. And side note, excellent job pronouncing my name. So thank you all for taking my call today. And I know that this is really the premise of this is really calling on Congress to put the money towards state and local funding. But overall, you know, when you talk about, you know, especially I'm calling from AP in New York, so I'm focused more on the speakers who are coming out of the New York City area. You know, so what is your overall sentiment? You know, the city is going to start to reopen, and so, you know, there have been, you know, nearly 400 somewhat between the MTA and city agencies. Civil servants who have been lost to COVID. So what are your feelings now about and your concerns about, right, about how protected you feel about, as the city tries to open up again, how safe do you feel? And any one of the New Yorker speakers who wants to take that, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, this is Henry Garrido again. So, I mean, obviously, our members, the vast majority of our members have been considering frontline employees. So 100,000 out of the 150,000 DC 37 members have been there from day one. So the idea of coming back to work is less of a concern to us because we've been back. We've been at work every single day, the vast majority of them, with the exception of some school employees or some after-school programs that have been doing remote learning. So the concerns that we have is the concerns many of New Yorkers have, right? The transit system, moving into a system that moves millions of people a day on a crowded car, right? How are you going to observe social distancing in that respect? We're concerned when we get back to work on the same aspect, right? We have people who sit cubicle next to each other that are not 2 feet apart. We're concerned about the public coming in to get services in confined spaces where the quality of the air is not that good to begin with, but now with COVID-19, you run the risk of a recurrence, a resurgence, a transmission. So I believe the issue of, you know, the issue of the social distance ambassador that the city has pronounced is really important, key for the public, but also key for us, for city workers. And the issue of contact tracing is also really important. I hope that answered your question.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And as a reminder, to register for a question, press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad right now. And there are no questions at this time. I'll now turn the conference back to Mr. Saunders.
Okay, well, I just want to thank Henry Garrido, Executive Director of District Council 37, Chris May, President of the Ohio Civil Service Employees Association, Carmen De Leon, our respiratory therapist, who is an everyday hero at Harlem Hospital Center in New York, and Vincent Variali, who's also the everyday hero, EMS lieutenant. They are providing essential public services to the citizens of New York and Ohio, and our members provide essential public services all across the country. We need to fund the front line so they can continue to do the jobs that they signed up for. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.